You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I've had sex in Utah. Have you had sex in Utah? I've had sex in Utah. But it's been a while, long time actually. But if I recall correctly, the sex in Utah was pretty good. I've also had sex with guys who fled Utah and the Mormon church, and that was also pretty good. Having sex with Mormons in Utah made me think of that Ben Franklin bit of advice for a friend thinking about taking a mistress. Franklin urged his friend to choose an older woman because they're so grateful. Well, if you're thinking about having gay sex, you might want to choose an ex-Mormon because they're so grateful and committed. It kind of makes sense, stands to reason, when someone has given up a lot to get that dick, when they've walked away from their faith, when they've risked and sometimes succeeded in alienating their families, they're not going to let any bit of that dick go to waste. Like Native Americans on the Great Plains, they are going to use every part of the animal. So I'm not going to share any other details. I will spare you all the mental images. But I did want to share this. I wasn't arrested and prosecuted for fornication while I was in Utah, or for sodomy, even though I could have been, at the time, arrested for both. In all fairness, at least on the fornication front, it's been a while since anyone was prosecuted for fornicating in Utah. It's been decades, actually. But sex between unmarried people is a crime in Utah. Class B misdemeanor with up to $1,000 in fines and 6 months in jail. Or it was a crime. Fornication was a crime in Utah until late last week when Utah's Republican governor, Gary Herbert, signed the Freedom to Fuck legislation that had been sitting on his desk for a month. So the next time you're in the Beehive State, don't you let Utah Criminal Code 76-7-103, which stated that any unmarried person who shall voluntarily engage in sexual intercourse with another is guilty of fornication, don't let that stop you from getting with the hottie you met in line for the chairlift, because that shit has been repealed. I'd like to thank Utah's political class, dominated as it is by conservative Mormon politicians, for repealing this backwards law over the objections of hyper-conservative Mormon politicians and preachers who worried that doing so would, can you guess, send the wrong message to young people. And speaking of young people, we're always supposed to be thinking about the children, but the kind of people who want us to think about the children are thinking very new and very different thoughts about the children. After the results of another study found that kids today are doing what people spent decades and hundreds of millions of your tax dollars urging kids to do just a few years ago. They're abstaining. The share of Americans not having sex has reached a record high, the headline in the Washington Post read last week. Subhead, which in this context means that little extra bit of headline, usually in a smaller font, right under the main headline and not what it means in hotels in Utah. Anyway, the subhead read, "You can blame young people for this dry spell, data show." All right, so while the U.S. population is aging, and that does account for some of the drop-off in total sexual activity, it can't account for all of it. Nope, turns out that a lot of the same young people who aren't buying diamonds or cars or McMansions, they're not having sex. Fully 28% of men under 30 report not having had even one sexual encounter in the last year, but only 18% of women under 30 report the same. This is a big spike in these numbers since 1989, when they were in their mid-teens and the gap between men and women was a single point or two, not 10 points. Quick observation, 28% of men under 30 aren't sexually active, while only 18% of women under 30 aren't sexually active. So it would appear that many young women are having sex with older men, or each other, or both. Now, to be clear, supermajorities of young people, male and female, are still sexually active. But the spike in sexually inactive young people has a lot of folks out there scratching their heads. Is it the economy? People living at home with their parents? Video games? Unenforced laws still on the books until recently in Utah? Or porn? It's porn. Everybody loves to blame porn. But people who watch porn, men and women both, tend to be more sexually active than people who don't. So maybe it's not porn. This report comes hard on the heels of Kate Julian's cover story in The Atlantic last year that detailed what she dubbed the sex recession. We had her on the show to talk about it. She cited a lot of other research that's been done. I'm not ready to draw any conclusions, and I don't have a pet theory of my own that explains this drop-off. Or, hey, maybe it's all the sex podcasts out there hosted by old people. Maybe that's a turnoff for young people. Or maybe fornicating was just more fun back when it was against the law in Utah and other states. But this is clearly an area that needs more study. I do want to highlight one thing that Elizabeth Nolan Brown at Reason said in reaction to this new study. The past few decades have also seen decreases in teen pregnancies, unintended pregnancies overall, abortions, and HIV infections. So maybe what we're seeing in the data isn't, or maybe what we're seeing in these data aren't, the beginning of the end of sex here. Maybe what we're seeing are fewer people having bad sex or reckless sex or risky sex. And that might be a good thing. But yeah, more study is needed. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro-free version of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the magnum version of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, it's twice as long and no ads. Caitlin Bailey from the new organization Decriminalizing Sex Work joins us to talk about, well, you'll never guess. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Bull and Branch, luxury, affordable, fair trade certified sheets. Get $50 off a set of sheets plus free shipping by going to bullandbranch.com and entering Savage. This episode is brought to you by Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that your butt will love and everyone who loves your butt will love too. Visit www.hellotushy.com for 10% off your entire order when you use the promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping and start washing. Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/savage. ThredUp.com/savage for an extra 30% off today.
Hey, Dan. I've been with my husband for almost 7 years, married for one. And I just have a question about our libidos. So we generally want to have sex the same number of times and around the same days. So that's really lucky. My problem is that once we start going, my sexual energy runs out faster. And I feel like I'm just waiting for him to come, waiting for him to finish. After only, 5-10 minutes, when we used to earlier in our relationship just go and go and go. And I'm not sure what to do. If I'm not in the mood, then we're both game for masturbatory assists. If he's not in the mood, I'm not in the mood. But, and if he finishes first, then he's always good to help me get off. But I just don't know what to do about, like, when we're having B&B and I can just stop mentally in the middle.
So it sounds like most everything is working. And when there's a disconnect, when you're horny, he's not, he's horny, you're not, you provide each other with pleasant, upbeat, friendly masturbatory assists, not guilt-laden masturbatory annoyed assists, and that's good. And the only problem seems to be that sometimes when you guys have PIV and you've finished and he hasn't, you've had your orgasm or your suite of orgasms, you kind of check out and you get a little bored and maybe a little annoyed and you're ready to be done and he ain't ready to be done. If you can be honest with him about this, you can shift from PIV to the masturbatory assist when, you're done. You do identify a dynamic though that's interesting. You say that you could go and go and go early in the relationship. Now when it's PIV, you're good for 5-10 minutes tops. And I assume that means that 7 years ago, 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when you guys were doing PIV, you could go and go and go. So let's say that's 1, 2, 3 goes, three times as much PIVing. That's good for you and fun for you. So instead of 5-10 minutes, that would be 15-30 minutes. It can help if you think about what sex was like early in the relationship. And early in a relationship, it's new. You're strangers to each other. You're still getting to know each other with your bodies. Things seem kind of risky, even if you've established a comfort with this person and an intimacy with this person. There's still an unknown quantity. And that kind of sense of risk and danger that even comes bundled with someone that you've vetted to the point where you feel comfortable being naked and intimate with them. It doesn't feel like bungee jumping. It feels safe enough. Still, there's risk and danger there. There's mystery there. And that dissipates over time. There's no way to will that back about this person. What you have to do is change the circumstances. You can't change who your husband is, but you can change when and where and how you're fucking your husband. It may be that when you guys have PIV, You're doing it in the same place at roughly the same time, on the same surface, that bed, every single time. And you're bored. And you're not bored with each other. You're not even bored with the sex. You're just not as good to go for as long. And I think if you shake up the things that you can shake up, monogamous relationship, you don't want to get divorced and find new partners, but you can change the place. You can change the time. You can change the circumstance. You can change the surfaces on which you have sex. And by changing those circumstances, you can add juice and excitement to the relationship, and then maybe you'll be in for longer than 5 or 10 minutes. You'll be able to go and go and go for longer. But you have to experiment to discover that. So go fuck him at his office. Have him come fuck you at your workplace. Fuck on the roof. Get a ladder and go up on a starry night and fuck outside on the roof. Go to a public sex environment where even if you're not going to touch anybody else, maybe even if you're not going to look at anybody else, you may be observed if you're comfortable with that, if that sounds exciting to you. Some public sex environments have private spaces where you can go in a room and close the door and lock it from the inside and be all by yourselves, but you were doing this incredibly naughty thing. And that kind of not changing partners, but changing the circumstances and the timing and the place and the surfaces where you have sex with your long-term committed partner can restore that sense of risk and danger and experiment and mystery and revive your sex life, can make it compelling again, can make you capable, perhaps, of going and going and going. But you got to carve out the time to do that, and you got to prioritize it. You got to prioritize sex. We live in a sexphobic, sex-negative culture. People who prioritize sex sometimes are looked down on, even looked down on themselves. They feel guilty. They feel like dirty sex monsters. And so, you know, long-term loving couples will often wedge sex in here and there where they can in their busy schedules, but it's not something that they schedule. So they'll go to their PTA meetings, they'll go to the movies, they'll go to dinner with friends, and then they'll wedge sex in here or there, around the edges, in the cracks, where they can. And what they don't do, what a lot of couples don't do, is say, here, this is the Saturday night, 4-hour block. We're not going to dinner with friends. We're not going to a movie and then going to try to maybe have sex later when we get home. We're having sex over those 4 hours. We're going to this place at this time to fuck each other's brains out. And if you prioritize it that way and prioritize it in a way where you're shaking up again the circumstances under which you have sex, you may find yourself, again, able to go and go and go. Block out the time and prioritize sex.
Hi, I have a question about something that happens to me. Whenever I have an orgasm, immediately afterward, I yawn once or twice. I don't know why. It's certainly not because I'm bored, but over the years with partners in particular, sometimes I've gotten comments like, oh, did that bore you? Or did you not enjoy this, our being together? So I wondered, is this a thing that's, you know, just physiological? Is it common, uncommon? Am I weird? I'm just wondering, and other listeners who had similar questions.
I feel like I need to get this printed on sheets and pillows. When you come, when a dude comes, when a woman comes, prolactin is released into the body. Dudes have a different reaction, a more intense reaction to prolactin. It's a hormone. And what it does is it makes your erection go away. Also makes you sleepy. Puts you to sleep, makes you yawn. And you should say that to your sex partners. If you're worried about someone reacting negatively in the moment after you come, if you yawn a couple of times, but you stay in the game, you know, you yawn, you shake it off, you make sure that she enjoyed herself, that she got off at least once, maybe many times. You can stay in the game, but you can say to someone in advance, like, hey, just a, like a heads up, sometimes after I come, I yawn once or twice. Doesn't mean I didn't love it. Actually means I did love it. I exerted myself. I exhausted myself. I'm spent. Blew that load. Here comes the prolactin. There goes the erection. And I might yawn once or twice, but I'm still present and I'm still here and I'm still happy you're here. You can say that to someone before sex. Might seem a little awkward to have that conversation before sex. You can certainly say that after sex. If someone who's the product of a shitty non-sex education in America doesn't know this, you can tell them. You can even haul out your phone and Google it for them. Interestingly, men produce 4 times as much prolactin after intercourse than they do after masturbation. So there's something about intimacy, something about that connection, something about that exertion that prompts a man really to, or perhaps a man's body to really flood itself with these hormones that make men and other vertebrates sleepy. Who's sleeping in your bed? All right. None of my business, unless you call the show, in which case it becomes my business. But I can tell you this. You want the people sleeping and doing other things in your bed to be as comfortable as possible, to want to come back to your bed as often as they're invited, which is why you want Boll & Branch sheets. Everything Boll & Branch makes, from bedding to blankets, is made from pure 100% organic cotton, which means their products start out super soft and get even softer over time. You buy directly from them, so you're essentially paying wholesale prices. Luxury sheets can cost up to $1,000 in the store, but Boll & Branch sheets are only a couple of $100. Everyone who tries Boll & Branch sheets loves them. That's why they have thousands and thousands of five-star reviews. Boll & Branch only uses sustainable and responsible methods of sourcing and manufacturing, and they donate a portion of every sale to a charity that helps fight human trafficking while preserving fair prices for consumers. And new sheets are arguably the best gift imaginable. Wouldn't you want someone you sleep with to give you new, beautiful sheets? So do it for them and for yourself, for those nights that you sleep over at their place. Shipping is free, and you can try them for 30 nights. If you don't love them, you can send them back for a refund, but I doubt that you'll want to send them back. Still, there is no risk, therefore no reason not to give Boll & Branch a try. To get started, right now my listeners get $50 off your first set of sheets at BollandBranch.com when you use the promo code SAVAGE. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com, promo code SAVAGE. BollandBranch.com, promo code SAVAGE.
Hey, Dan. Warner calling here. I was jacking off into a hand towel, and then I proceeded to throw the hand towel into the washing machine. And then I started filling up the washing machine with my kids' clothes. And I stopped and thought, wait a minute, does the cum actually exit the washing machine, or does it get evenly spread out in the clothes in the washer? And that made me feel a bit icky, so I just threw the towel away this time and just washed my kids' clothes separate from it. But you know, what happens to the cum in the washing machine? Does it go away, or does it just spread out?
If it spreads out, isn't it less offensive than the skid marks in your kids' underpants that would spread out as well? Wouldn't you be more worried about all of your clothes coming out covered in kid shit than your kids' clothes coming out glazed with a tiny bit of your semen? No, it all goes away. Your clothes are dunked in water multiple times, and then soap is run through them, and then the water is drained, and there's a spin cycle, and then your clothes are re-soaked in fresh water, and there's a second spin cycle. No, this is not a problem. This is just the kind of cultural paranoia that is induced by this crazy obsession that so many people have with there having to be some sort of no man's zone, no woman's zone, no envy zone between children and anything and everything sexual. However loose or obscure or non-existent the association might be. Lots of bodily fluids and effluvia and disgusting crap goes into washing machines, and clean clothes come out. You do not have to worry about a drop of your semen getting on your kids' clothes in the washing machine. And even worst case scenario, if it did, what the fuck is going to happen? Kid's not going to drop dead. Kid's never going to know. You're never going to know. Maytag is never going to know. This is a non-problem. Please stop thinking about it. The fact that you are thinking about it is actually kind of a little creepy. It's not the washing machine or the cum rag. That's the problem. It's that you would think this could be an issue or there might be some harm in it, even if it were, which it isn't. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Tushy. Tushy is the modern bidet attachment that hooks up to any standard toilet in under 10 minutes and gives your butt the thorough clean it deserves. Your ass and everyone who loves your ass and gets near your ass deserves it. People sometimes call into the show and ask about keeping themselves clean and ready and prepped for butt sex, and this is a big part of how you can accomplish that. You might think that bidets are expensive, but not Tushy. It is only, I hope you're sitting down, $69. That's cheaper than the average vibrator. If you're going to invest in your sexual pleasure, why not invest in your health and cleanliness down there too? Tushy provides a luxurious clean at an affordable price, and I highly recommend it. Go to HelloTushy.com and get 10% off your order with promo code SAVAGE. Stop wiping, start washing with Tushy.
Hi, Dan. I'm in my mid-20s and I live on the West Coast. I just came out as queer a couple months ago and I've learned that I definitely prefer women. Usually when men hit on me, I have no problem saying, I'm only dating women, don't waste your drink money, I'm not interested, and then they'll usually just leave me alone. I'm now seeing this girl that I really like, and she's not into guys at all. She's totally a lesbian. We are both very feminine, and we've been hit on by men every time we've been out together. She seems unbothered by this and usually doesn't interrupt them, just says, no thanks, but the guys never take the hint. I think it's annoying that we keep getting interrupted, and sometimes I'll tell them, we're here together, so we're not interested, but they either don't believe us, or they'll start trying even harder. We've even had gross stuff, like, oh yeah, make out then. So I'm getting really over it. How can I gracefully but believably tell these men to fuck off because I don't like dick anymore? Maybe if any queer women have feedback, that would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Tossing your call out there. And of course, welcoming the feedback of other queer women who might be able to offer you strategies for deflecting this kind of male attention. I gotta say, though, I want to ask you where you're going. I know that men, shitty men, hit on women wherever they are. Street corners, buses, subways, workplaces, classrooms. Everywhere women go, there are sometimes shitty men hitting on them. But the kinds of places where men approach women and offer to buy them drinks are usually pickup joints, not subway cars. And so if you and your girlfriend, because you wanna go hang out in a nightclub that's mixed, that's queer and straight, are going to be approached by some men who can't tell just by looking at you that you are together. And so you're going to have to deflect this kind of male attention, people offering to buy you drinks. When you tell someone to fuck off and go away, and that you aren't interested and you aren't looking and you don't have to be open to going home with or accepting a drink from anybody just because you're in that kind of a space where that is the expectation – you shouldn't be shocked, though, when you get that kind of attention in that kind of a space. Guys who won't take no for an answer, guys who won't go away, guys who tell you to make out are assholes. And if you go to a place that's well-run, you should be able to say something to a bartender or a doorman and get that guy bounced. But if you're in a pickup joint, you know, we need these spaces in the world. You know, if we want people not to be hitting on each other on buses, on subways, in classrooms, at workplaces, we need these spaces that when we enter them, we say, while I am here for this time, you may approach me. A lot of those spaces are virtual. Tinder, Grindr, OkCupid, Too Many Fish, Christian Mingle, Farmers Only. A lot of those spaces are virtual, where you, by entering them, invite a pass, invite attention. Some of them are IRL. And the IRL ones, not subways, not schools, not buses, not whatever, are nightclubs, certain kinds of bars and clubs, and we know what those bars and clubs are like. It's like defining pornography. You know it when you see it. You know what that kind of club or bar is when you choose to enter it or when you see it. And so I don't want to minimize the annoyance of the guys who won't fuck off or the guys who ask you and your girlfriend to perform bi or lesbian for them. That's assholery and obnoxious, and fuck those guys. But I got to say, you can't be upset if you go to the kind of place where people are picking each other up, including opposite sex types. You can't complain about being approached by people who might want to initiate a conversation, offer to buy you a drink. That's the social norm in that space. Do you want to be subjected to that kind of attention? Then maybe you should go to some other bars and clubs or different places where that's not the norm or the expectation, where it isn't one of those spaces that when we enter them, we are saying, you may approach me. Fashion. It's the second most polluting industry in the world. That's why you should check out shopping secondhand at ThredUp. Choosing used gives clothes a second life and reduces waste. ThredUp offers everything you love about shopping secondhand, the thrill of finding an unbelievable deal without having to worry about quality or digging through racks at a resale store. ThredUp is the largest online consignment and thrift store where you can shop high-end quality pieces for up to 90% off estimated retail. They add over 50,000 new items every day, all at unbeatable prices. Shop all your favorite brands right from the comfort of your couch. Madewell from $9, Anthropologie from $13, Coach from $25, Nike from $6. Everything is hand-inspected and triple-checked to make sure it's in high-quality condition. And ThredUp makes it super easy to shop. Customize your experience to see only items in your size, your style, and your price range. Look good and do good with ThredUp. Go to threadup.com/savage today, and you'll get an extra 30% off your first order. That's threadup.com/savage, threadup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. I am a 24-year-old cisgendered straight female living in a metropolitan area. My question is about the ethics of exploring sexuality without really making people feel like objects or like experiments. I have always identified as straight, but recently I have realized that in a few different scenarios, I have been attracted to just a masculine energy in general, including lesbian females who lean more butch or people who are non-binary but lean more into the masculine realm. I'm asking what the ethics are about approaching exploring this interest and this attraction without making people that I am exploring that with feel as though they are just an experiment. I would never want to make somebody feel like that, especially if those people are very comfortable in their sexuality and they tend to engage more in people that are already very comfortable in how they identify. I would really love to be open and explore these options, but I also really don't want to ever make anyone feel uncomfortable. And I would really love your advice on how to navigate this. Possibly also some language on how to explain to somebody the situation I'm in and let them know that I am not completely sure, but I do really want to explore without putting them in danger of hurting them or giving them false expectations.
There's a lot of people out there who are interested in the kind of sexual experimentation and sexual exploration that you're talking about, who have otherwise identified as straight and then suddenly realized that perhaps there's more going on for them. And they're attracted to more and different kinds of people than they thought they were. And if they're conscientious, they never want to make someone feel like they're an experiment. And so they will often attempt to pass themselves off as something that they're not, as queer or as more experienced than they are. And they will misrepresent themselves. They'll go to a lesbian bar, a lesbian club, a lesbian night, or a queer night, and they will try to perform queerness. They'll try to pass. And it's that misrepresentation that can make someone who winds up going home with you feel lied to and feel used. So your only path here, if you want to avoid making someone feel like your experiment, is to seek out people who want to be your experiment, who are excited about being the person who is the first butch queer lesbian that gets to eat your previously straight identified pussy. And those women are out there. There's a piece at The Guardian, major publication, "Why Chasing Straight Women Still Thrills Me. They take ages to seduce, they're rubbish in bed, and then they go straight back to their boyfriends. But Stacey Ann Chin still can't resist turning a straight woman's head." There are women out there who want what you're offering, who are attracted to your particular type, your circumstance, the moment of life that you're in, this exploration and self-discovery journey that you're about to go on. There are women out there, butch women, who would love to fuck you. Be who you are. Be honest about who you are. You will attract those women. Be honest about who you are, and you will repel women who don't want to be your first, women who don't want to be your experiment, women who don't want to fuck you for a month and then see you go back to your boyfriend. And then you don't have to worry about landing in bed with someone who's going to be angry at you because you didn't misrepresent yourself, because you didn't lie, because you didn't try to pass yourself off as something or someone you're not.
I have a two-part question. I am a heterosexual female, and I've been married for over 5 years. My husband has a huge wish to have a threesome, and I have no interest in taking part. So I thought I would let him do this on his own if he found two women. So another issue is that we do have herpes, so I think it would be so messy, and we could just like use protection, not use protection, use protection, not use protection. So it'd just be easier if he just did it on his own anyways. What are your thoughts on that, for one? And for two, if we're in a monogamous relationship, but we want to contemplate just trying out openness. What do you think the first steps are in looking into it and having those discussions and figuring out what works?
Start with your second question. The first step towards openness is a conversation, and you guys are having that conversation. You have taken the first step. You can do a little reading if you want to. I always recommend Open by Tristan Taormino. It's a terrific book for couples who have been monogamous up to now and are thinking about perhaps opening their relationship. But you're already doing what I would tell someone to do as a first step. The first step isn't a three-way with two other people who aren't your partner. The first step is a long, involved conversation with your partner about openness, which comes in many forms. You know, open can be polyamory. There are different kinds of polyamory. You know, polyamory is a concurrent committed romantic relationship, or an openness to concurrent committed romantic relationships. Some people use poly and open and conflate poly and open as if they are and mean the same thing, and they don't mean the same thing, and they aren't the same thing. And even openness, there's a spectrum. You know, is it a DADT, don't ask, don't tell, open relationship? Is it every once in a while? Do you have a separate continents or time zone rule? Is it a no friends and no connections, nobody you see more than once, not in our bed, not in our house? People have all sorts of different rules for open relationships. And I can't assign you and your husband rules. You guys have to work out together what you're comfortable with and what works for you now. And that's a conversation in an open relationship that really never stops. People are constantly revisiting their rules, renegotiating their rules, loosening their rules. And the loosening of the rules should never be just unspoken or by default. Those should always be active, engaged, ongoing, consented to moves, not just, oh, by the way, I'm not using condoms with my other partners now. See ya. That's not how you do it. But I don't need to tell you all that because you're already having those conversations. Go get Open by Tristan Taormino and read it. As for the three-way, like I said, I think a three-way with two other people is a dive into the deep end of the pool of openness. If you guys have been monogamous for the last 5 years, how herpes factors in? Well, your husband will need to disclose that to his partners. You described a scenario where you weren't interested in having a three-way with your husband or another woman because he would have to go back and forth between using protection with that other person and not using protection with you, his committed, fluid, bonded partner who also has herpes. But that's true of a lot of three-ways, where if it's a three-way involving a couple and a third, that the couple may not use protection and will use protection with the third. That's not uncommon. So it's not necessarily the barrier you might think it is to a three-way if you're interested in a three-way. If you're not, though, great. You can give your husband permission to have that experience with some other women at some other point way, way, way down the road. Because what you'll learn when you read Open, and if you do other reading about moving into ethical non-monogamy, is you're going to want to take baby steps and assess how you feel while you take those baby steps. Maybe the first time he's with somebody else, there's no PIV, or maybe the first time you guys think about any sort of erotic contact with others, it's just flirting in a bar or grinding on a dance floor, and you can see him and he can see you, and you can see what kind of emotions your partner being with someone else dredges up before your partner has had intercourse with someone else. Because sometimes what people discover when they move toward ethical non-monogamy or they explore openness is that it isn't for them. And better to discover that before there's been intercourse or something that feels really hugely emotionally significant than after.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I am a mostly hetero, misgendered female in my late 20s. I've recently started hooking up with a guy who I really like. During our last encounter, I asked him what he was into sexually, and he made a clear distinction between lovemaking and kink play and stated that he doesn't want to involve me in his kink. I'm worried that his intent to limit that aspect of our sex life could indicate a case of Madonna whore complex. I want to keep seeing this guy and am interested in exploring kink with him, but I also want to help him understand that lovemaking and kink can overlap with each other and that I don't want him to shut me out. What is my best approach here?
I wouldn't lump everyone who makes the separation your partner makes between vanilla and kink into the Madonna whore column, Madonna whore pile. I wouldn't chuck him into there. There are some people who have some kinks that they find easier to get into if the person that they're exploring these kinks with is only the kink, is only that fantasy figure, is only that master, that they've endowed with this kind of power through power exchange, or that slave from whom they've taken power in the negotiated power exchange. And knowing all the other details of that person's life, or having sincere feelings of affection for that person, I think in any sort of power exchange relationship, there may be feelings of gratitude, admiration, attraction. But some people find in that kink space that affection makes it difficult to be, you know, the mean glowering master in the role play scenario, or the, like, you know, submissive bootlicking sub. And it makes it hard for them to enter that. And so they just, they separate those things, that there are certain sex acts and a kind of sexual pleasure that they enjoy with a committed partner in the context of a committed relationship. And then there are these kinks that they explore with others. They don't have that same connection to, that intimacy with, because the intimacy acts as kind of a circuit breaker for their kinks. And I don't think that's the same thing as Madonna whore. There are things I will do with people that I respect and love, very limited things. And then people I don't care about, people I look down on, people I think of as whores, I will do these disgusting things with them. That's all kinds of fucked up. The kinky person who is self-aware and self-actualized enough to know what works for them in different kinds of relationships, in the context of different kinds of relationships, that's not necessarily fucked up. If it's expressed in a healthy and considerate, and even in the context of the kink connection, a loving way, just not a deeply connected, intimate way. So you need to talk to your partner about what his kinks are and what are the reasons that he wants to reserve these certain kinks and the exploration of them for partners that he isn't intimate with in the same way he would be with you. And if you're interested in exploring those things, some people successfully make the leap. Some people who thought these things were separate, fine, and with a particular person in a relationship, if that person wants it, they find themselves able, once asked and challenged, to incorporate more kink into their loving, committed relationship. But some people can't. And I don't think that it's a failure on their part, morally, sexually, ethically, romantically, intimately. It's just some people have sexual interests. Some people have desires that have to be contained in a vessel where there is some distance and separation. That's not an excuse to use people. It's not an excuse to Madonna whore people. You know, in the Madonna whore situation, often Madonna's up on a pedestal where there is no sex. There's no sexual anything, no vanilla at all, because sex is dirty and disgusting, and you do that with people you think are dirty and disgusting. If he isn't dividing the world up in that way, he may not have a problem, or may not have had a problem until you came along, because you would like both. And that's something you guys are going to have to talk about and negotiate and see if you can be incorporated into his kinks or not. And if you can't, well, then you're in deal breaker or price of admission territory, and you're going to have to make a decision about whether you want to remain in this relationship.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 31-year-old straight female. I grew up in a very dysfunctional household where mental illness runs in our family. Once when I was 15 and my brother was 8, we tongue kissed. I don't remember who initiated it, but I know it just kind of happened. It's resurfaced back into my memory recently, and I can't stop thinking about it. I feel so guilty, disgusted, and ashamed because of the age difference, and especially because I should have known better since I was molested for years as a child. I don't speak to him or any of my immediate family now for unrelated reasons, so I'm not sure if he even remembers, but I feel like a monster and can't even bring this up to my therapist. Is it common for siblings to experiment? How can I ever forgive myself or move past this?
Sexual experimentation between siblings is not that uncommon. What you describe, though, 15-year-old, tongue-kissing an 8-year-old, I think falls into the category of sexual exploitation. And if it had escalated, sexual abuse, and it may have been experienced by your younger sibling as sexual abuse. You have to recognize, though, that it existed in the context of a hyper-dysfunctional family, and that you had been a victim yourself of sexual abuse and violation. And you got to give yourself a little bit of not a break. You want to hold yourself accountable, and you want to wrestle with what happened, and you want to really process it. And you're not going to be able to do that in a call to a sex advice podcast. You're really going to have to do that in a long extended series of conversations with your therapist. You need to unburden yourself. You are not a monster. You are a victim, as is often the case with young children who are sexually abused in their families. You had very poor boundaries. You had poor impulse control. And you did to others in your familial orbit as you had been done to. Not as severely, but yeah, you're going to continue to feel terrible about this. You're going to continue to walk with this stone on your shoe until you unburden yourself with someone who can not exonerate you, but help you put it into its proper context and help you understand it. And you can forgive yourself while also holding yourself accountable. And you can forgive yourself while also doing everything that you can to break that cycle of abuse that you were a part of in your own family. And the way you do that is with the help of a good therapist. So I would encourage you, strongly encourage you, to open up to your therapist about this. It is not as uncommon as you think. You are a victim and a victimizer, which is also very common, and you need help, not to gain absolution, but so that you can forgive yourself. And it is possible to forgive yourself without absolving yourself. And a therapist can help you see that. And now your tweets. Hot are your tweets. At Fake Dan Savage, it's not narcissistic for women to think they can fix a guy with a suitable application of pussy, an observation I frequently made on this show. It's just plain old internalized sexism with a dollop of Christianity. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Also a factor, no doubt. The patriarchy, internalized sexism, and Christianity can never be factored out of any conversations about sex and sexuality. Good point. J. Marshall Freeman tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, are the tech-savvy at-risk youth who tech your show the same tech-savvy at-risk youth as 12 years ago? Or is it more of a rotating menudo situation that they age out of? It's not a menudo situation. It's more of a Logan's Run kind of situation. Those of you who don't get the reference are going to want to watch that movie. Oh, Michael York, so young, so hot. And it was before he became a right-wing lunatic. Logan's Run. Enjoy. And finally, Sarah Corchesney tweets, today's sex and gender genes class at Northern Essex was built almost entirely around episodes of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you, Dan, for making my students question everything they think they know about human sexuality. You are welcome, and thank you for including the Savage Lovecast and all of my callers and guests in your class. We're all happy that we could make a contribution. And now your response calls.
Hi, I'm calling with a comment on episode 648 to the woman who was angry about her boyfriend not introducing him to her kids. I think he's still with his wife. I think he's cheating on her, and he's been lying to her this whole time. And I'm kind of surprised Dan didn't mention that potential scenario. Anyway, DTMFA. Just a comment about the last episode. A woman called in about a video game in which it was like a first person rapist video game. And one thing that I wanted to add was that, like, yes, there's no data that correlates a violent video game or violent pornography with acts of violence in the three-dimensional world. However, it does correlate with perpetuating rape culture. And rape culture isn't necessarily an act of violence, but it is a more subtle, pervasive mentality throughout the culture, and it's video games like this perpetuate that, and that's one of the reasons why it should not be disseminated en masse, and I'm really glad to hear it was taken down from the platform.
Hi, Dan. I was just listening to the caller response on today's episode, and it was the housekeeper who was talking about how single men in their 20s and 30s are really dirty and gross, and she sees this so often that she feels that it's how they're socialized rather than just an individual quirk. I totally agree with that. But she did make the comment that their moms aren't teaching them these life skills for cleaning and being responsible. And I take issue with that because you know who else needs to be teaching them those skills? Their dads.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. 2064. My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival Hump is in New York City and Chicago this week. Find tickets at humpfilmfest.com. And we're getting closer to the premiere of our new film festival, Spliff, a film festival made by stoners for stoners. It is coming to Denver next week, to Portland and Seattle for the 420 weekend, and to San Francisco on May 3rd and 4th. Head to spliffilmfest.com for a trippy trailer and to order your tickets. And one more bit of business, Savage Love Live will be in Seattle on May 11th, where I'll be answering your burning questions live on stage at the Egyptian with a couple of great guests. Head over to savagelovecast.com and click on events to get tickets to that upcoming live show and other upcoming live shows all around the country. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Caitlin Bailey on Twitter. She spells it K-A-Y-T-L-I-N-B-A-I-L-E-Y. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy, ageless, immortal youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week for another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for having me.